Welcome to Insights and Indicators. I'm Jason Thomas, Carlyle's Head of Global Research and Investment Strategy. And in this podcast, I share our observations and opinions on the economic landscape, as well as insights from research being conducted by our team here at Carlyle. Today, I'm joined by Will Kinzel, Global Head of Government Affairs here at Carlyle. And we'll discuss the current policy landscape in the United States, including recent changes, policy objectives, and the negotiations that are underway with the U.S. and its trading partners, and the impact that we should expect for both operating companies and, of course, investors. This episode was recorded on May 8th, 2025, and the discussion reflects composite portfolio data and analysis of recent government reports that are accurate as of that date. So before turning to Will, just a few words about what we saw in the portfolio during the month of April. And I would say that from our perspective, April was a really interesting month because you really felt a sense of what we describe as suspended animation. And what I mean by that is we really did not see the sorts of pricing adjustments, the sorts of changes to production schedules, the sorts of changes to demand for labor or employment markets more broadly that one might have expected in response to the tariff announcements and the Liberation Day of April 2nd. I think that a lot of this is explained by competitive pressures. So these tariff-exposed industries, really, they're operating in a game-theoretic environment where their decisions about pricing, procurement, production really involve very difficult conversations. In some cases, you have to ask your supplier to accept much lower prices to account for the tariffs. In other cases, of course, you're pushing on price aggressively to try to make up for the tariffs with your customers. And you don't really know what your competitors are going to do, how they're going to behave. And of course, this is an environment of extraordinary uncertainty. If you burn bridges with your customers in a way that your competitors do not, only to find out that the tariffs that you're responding to go away in a month or 2 months' time, you've made a really bad decision and very much want to avoid that. So I think there's a sense of just businesses not wanting to be hasty. So we have seen price increases. We have seen some changes. Again, it's just not at the scale that you would have expected given the tariff schedule that's currently in place as of May 8th, 2025. And I would say that a lot of this really has to do, or at least the freedom to behave in this manner, has to do with the enormous inventory accumulation that we've seen really starting after the election. So December, January, February, March. And this is deliveries, front-loaded deliveries of components, parts, equipment, raw materials, just things that are needed to make, to manufacture. And these inventories create a buffer. Obviously, they were acquired in the era before tariffs. So there's no pressure to change pricing or make other adjustments. You can continue to maintain your current pricing schedule and continue to manufacture as you're drawing down those inventories. I do think that there is an expectation, of course, that there will be some more policy clarity, or again, perhaps the tariffs come off, and then management teams can make decisions at that point, just adjust as necessary once there's greater clarity in what to expect going forward. But again, no hiring freezes, nothing that is really abrupt as it relates to pricing. Again, here and there, you see increases in prices. And then again, no really dramatic change in underlying production. So even as sentiment is so weak, and even as many of the surveys that we see would be consistent with much bigger drops in economic activity or a far larger price shock, you see a really embedded conservatism in management teams that very often they have 2 to 3 months to sort of figure things out, wait and see, project normalcy. And again, I think much of this is going to hinge on the policy developments that we see over the next several weeks and months. And that's why Will is here. Will, our head of global government affairs. So, Will, thank you so much for joining us this month.
Jason, thanks for having me.
So I do want to start, again, it's May 8th, so we got news today about the deal with the United Kingdom. it sounds like first they're going to maintain a 10% tariff rate, which is interesting because I think that their perception of many market participants, investors, observers, was that some of these negotiations were intended to actually reduce that baseline tariff, which that did not happen. They did, however, get a reduction in the auto imports from the UK to the United States. It's from 25% for all autos currently to just 10% for autos that originate in the United Kingdom. I think that that applies to the first 100,000 units that are imported, but that was interesting. And then, of course, they made some agreement as it relates to purchases of beef and other products from the U.S., some related to aviation. I'm wondering, first, is this the start of a flood of deals? Do you think that the administration has a number of these sorts of agreements in the hopper and is going to release them on a more or less scheduled basis to maintain momentum in markets? Or how should we interpret this first deal that was announced?
I think, Jason, that you interpret this one as progress, right? I think you're hopeful about where things can go into the future. You see this first deal with the UK as a step in the right direction that starts to work through some of these outstanding issues that we have with different trading partners that the White House is sort of bringing to the fore. Now, in fairness, you probably could look at this UK deal and say this was probably maybe one of the easier ones to figure out. The U.S. has a positive surplus when it comes to the United Kingdom from a trade perspective. Not as difficult as dealing perhaps or working through the issues with some of the countries, whether you're looking at Southeast Asia or other places that we know are in the mix where the U.S. has a deficit. I think in my experience with this president, both in his first term and now, you learn to take them at their word and take them when they say that they're talking to a number of countries and working through a process that they announced, I want to say about a week and a half ago, of bringing in a group of countries every week and then rotating through every 3 weeks. I think this should give everybody sort of a sense of, okay, it feels like there should be a path. It feels like we're starting to be on that path. And time's going to tell, I think, in the next week or two to see, do we see something with South Korea? Do we see something with Japan? Certainly the reelected Prime Minister of Canada, Mark Carney's visit to the Oval Office earlier this week, the tone of that meeting was just, I think, should give some people a sense of optimism that there could be a path forward both with Canada and Mexico. And certainly India has to be in that mix too when it comes to negotiations from a bilateral standpoint. So Jason, I think we sort of look at this and say, okay, no rushes yet, but this looks like we could be on a path that starts to address a number of countries as we head into the end of this pause, which coincides with July 9th.
So again, what was interesting is that this 10% baseline tariff was retained.
Absolutely.
Do you think that this is a key source of revenue? We can talk about reconciliation and some other issues later, but I found that interesting because this is obviously something that, you know, the expectations, and as we've talked about before, 10% tariffs, that can be disruptive. It certainly poses significant costs on the economy, but, you know, it's manageable. You can apportion the cost between the exporting country and the supplier. There's some reduction in import price. There's some perhaps narrowing of margin from the importer or the user of the input. There's perhaps some increase in the retail sales price, but it's manageable. But this seems sort of more or less a permanent feature of the policy here. Would you agree?
I would. I was in that camp of negotiated outcomes, I think, early on to think that even the 10% perhaps is something that could be negotiable as one last piece. But, you know, one of the things that a country struggled with, that we had these conversations when Harvey, our CEO, was in town a couple of weeks ago meeting with different foreign ambassadors, is these countries are all wondering, so if I'm first at the table, do I get the floor deal or the ceiling deal, right? And so that 10%, I think from a UK standpoint, you're going to look at that and say, that's got to stay in place for everybody else if that's what we're going to live with too. So I think we see that for the foreseeable future. Obviously, there's some revenue implications there, but not revenue implications that really can get factored into this reconciliation process up on Capitol Hill outside of just a rhetorical context. I think we have this 10% to live with. As you said, I think for a lot of different companies out there, that's something they can manage through as opposed to seeing a tariff rate that was at 47% or even higher. 10% feels like something they can figure out on an ongoing basis.
You know, it's interesting when you think about that. So last year, the tariff average effective tariff rate, which of course depends on the actual categories of goods that we import, was about 2.4%. A 10% baseline tariff would actually, if you just assume there's no real change in the flows of goods, would generate about $250 to almost $300 billion a year. So I imagine that that would go a long way in making members of Congress feel more comfortable about voting for something that might otherwise be perceived as widening the deficit.
Sure. And it's, I think, from a rhetorical standpoint, if you're a member of Congress, you can say, look, I'm supporting the president. I'm going to vote for the reconciliation package that's out there. And in addition to all the math that goes on in a reconciliation package, we have this additional $300 billion in tariff revenue that this White House has put in place and isn't, you know, when you put it all together, that's why I feel comfortable about the overall package and leadership in the White House. As I mentioned before, it isn't for those that really are going to get in the weeds on Capitol Hill about scores from the Congressional Budget Office or someplace else. The tariff revenue, because it's controlled by the president, is hard and isn't statutorily in place and locked in that way. It won't get scored in the same manner that a tax increase or a tax decrease might get considered. But certainly, I think you're right from the rhetorical standpoint. Any Republican member of Congress may feel just a little bit more comfortable about the overall fiscal picture when you put that those two together.
So there's obviously this 10% baseline that seems to be something that's going to be a feature of most of these agreements. There's the product-specific tariffs, which also are subject to negotiation, as we saw with the UK. But the elephant in the room is, of course, the U.S.-China relationship, the bilateral trade relationship. There's scheduled meeting in Geneva, Switzerland. What are you expecting from that meeting, and where are you expecting these negotiations to head?
Well, just to drop back to the auto example with the UK, how they sort of dropped from a tariff standpoint into a quota, I think that's a pretty good indicator that in other negotiations, the White House and the U.S. negotiators feel good about using that type of a quota system. They used that previously when it came to steel and aluminum imports in the first term. So I think that's a good thing just to look for as we kind of move forward into negotiations with other countries.
And what you mean is that there's a certain number of units or certain volumes that could be imported into the United States that are subject to a lower tariff rate or maybe even no tariff, we'll see with the negotiations. And then above that quantity, they get hit with the 25% or whatever that product specific tariff would be.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And so I think you alluded to this. I think it's 100,000 vehicles from an auto standpoint that can come into the United States at one tariff rate, and the 100,001st vehicle would then come in at a higher rate from the UK. But it seems to be an effective tool that they feel comfortable using in the, have used in the past and putting it in now. But pivoting back to your question about China, that's the biggest question out there, right? And just in terms of supply chains and the overall impact. Certainly, there's been lots of efforts by various industries to sort of de-risk and perhaps move production from China to a Vietnam or a Thailand or some other country, or bring it back to even the US. But there always remains this, you know, some element that is of the supply chain that just fits there and doesn't really fit anywhere else. I think you take a look at the UK deal, you take a look at everything else, and then I don't think the Geneva meeting's a coincidence. I don't think they just sort of randomly said, oh, are you going to be there? Because we're going to be there. That feels a little too contrived. So I actually take that as a pretty positive step, that you're going to have a meeting with really the two top deputies from a trade perspective in Secretary Bessent and U.S. Trade Representative Greer with the Chinese representatives over in Geneva. One has to think that it's probably any resolution there is a little bit of a taking small steps at a time. And we've seen sort of some headlines and quotes to this degree over the past couple of weeks that an acknowledgement that 145% tariff on one side and 125% back from the Chinese on the other side is effectively an embargo. And that finding some pathways of agreement, certainly fentanyl could be part of that agreement, but finding some pathways to get to a tariff rate that is in the 50s or 60s, certainly I think changes the calculus dramatically for different supply chain decisions that are being made and whether or not consumer goods can be actually on the shelves versus not on the shelves at all.
And I think that it's also would seem that lowering the tariff rate to wherever you think it ends up, but a suggestion that there's more work to do, right? That there may be some discussion that this is a first step and there'll be longer term negotiations with trying to have a better path forward in the bilateral relationship. Maybe it's the external imbalances of China more generally. Do you think that that's what this is setting up for? Or do you think the administration will try to prepare American consumers, American businesses for the idea that 60% tariffs say, again, who knows, but something, a tariff rate of that size is going to be in place for a long time to come?
I think on certain goods, you could see high tariff rates for a long time to come. I do, on a broad basis, though, I think this is a first step. And let's see what type of outcomes emerge from meeting in Switzerland. But if you see some incremental progress now, maybe in a couple months, there's another incremental step that can occur. I think this is a journey of not just like 4 or 5 steps, but probably 25 or 50 to gradually start to address some of the different concerns that exist from the U.S. side and concerns that may, there may be concerns that exist from the Chinese side as well. The question comes back to, well, what should the consumers expect and what should businesses that are importing expect? You've got to hope for a step that gets into a place that's manageable to start, where there's actually a way to deal with that price. Certainly we've had conversations with companies in our portfolio where if the conversation's around 50 or 60, they can think through that calculus. If it remains where it is, it's just not a reasonable ask in terms of costs to absorb or even to pass on. So again, I think China needs to be viewed in a very different way than every other negotiation. Every other negotiation is going to look for a framework where there's agreed upon components that may be, you know, where details can be fleshed out into the future. But China, I think, is going to take a while.
One final question. When you talk to administration officials about tariffs, very often they emphasize that the administration has a three-pronged policy approach. One is, of course, rebalancing trade relationships. But another is tax relief and tax incentives for domestic investment. And then the third is broad deregulation. So I'm wondering if you could just quickly summarize where you feel we are as it relates to the reconciliation bill, the potential tax relief, incremental tax relief for business investment, and then also deregulation.
Sure. And it's, I think you're spot on in terms of those three priorities from an administration standpoint. I think they see those making trade fair for U.S. businesses and the United States generally, that's a high priority. And it goes hand in hand with tax relief and the reconciliation package and then deregulation efforts as a way to unleash, in their view, the American economy. On the reconciliation front, in about 4 or 5 days, next Tuesday, we're expecting the Ways and Means Committee to mark up their piece of the House reconciliation bill. That's really sort of the big step to get through, along with some of the other House committees acting. Every conversation we have with members of Congress on the Republican side, they view reconciliation as something that simply has to happen, sort of a too big to fail mantra. So we're expecting that that's going to go through. Some details yet to be worked out, but maybe by having something to the president's desk by the end of July is, I think, a reasonable expectation. On the deregulation side, biggest challenge the administration has there is really getting the right people into the right seats. And they've obviously got their sort of top line nominees in place and through the Senate in, as far as the president's cabinet, they've got deputies in place. But to really get into a deregulation agenda and press that down through a number of the different cabinet posts, you've got to get to that assistant secretary level and get some of those folks in place. Having a new chair at the SEC, super helpful in that regard. Paul Atkins is starting to execute on a deregulation agenda. It'll take some time to really bring that, to do the legwork that's necessary on the inside to then bring that out. Same thing at the FTC or the FCC, as far as those other agencies go. I think the biggest thing holding them back, to the extent anything is on deregulation, is just getting the right people through the Senate. And once that happens, then they've got some clear pathways and a clear agenda items that they want to hit. But if you took all of that, looked at the July 9th date for the current sort of suspension of the reciprocal tariffs, with the thought that maybe in the next 2 months, it might not be all 17 countries that they're talking to, but it might be a good number of them that have hit trade deals. You then see a tax package extending current rates for individuals and then adding in business-friendly investment rates. And then sort of a deregulation agenda that starts to come a little bit more to life as we get a little more time to process nominations through the Senate. There's a path where you sort of see that end of July, August, and the administration is actually firing on a number of the cylinders that they want to be firing on.
Great. Well, Will, thanks so much for your time.
Absolutely, Jason. I'm a long time listener, first time caller, I feel, but it's glad to be with you and hope I get invited back.
No, absolutely. This is a great debut, and I look forward to your second, third, and fourth appearance. And to the audience, as always, thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us for next month's episode of Insights in Indicators.